Leva Therapeuli on Castro, thank you so much for being with us. 2020 Democratic presidential candidate. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Tuesday of each month at 6:30 p.m.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. At 8, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. On June 29th, the Proud Boys marched in Portland and were met by a coalition of activists. Abe and Joe talk with a witness.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Radiance of Resistance, a night with Jana Jihad on Monday, July 29th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Jana Jihad Tamimi, 13-year-old Palestinian activist, began recording, reporting on, and sharing her lived reality from the age of 7. Shortly after, two of her relatives were killed by Israeli forces. Jana now enjoys a global following, serves as ambassador of the South African Palestinian Children's Initiative, and has been awarded internationally for her media role. Again, that's Radiance of Resistance, a night with Jana Jihad on Monday, July 29th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1226 Southwest Salmon Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, deli soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information is available on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hope you're all doing well out there.
How could we not be? This is America.
Well, because it's summer, but it's really not summer.
Well, yeah, but that's a common thing. I'm back in the 60s.
Even, oh, God, here we go.
No, this is important. We had the summer of the green tomato.
Right.
Yeah.
In which there were
no red tomatoes.
Yeah, okay.
That's the idea, you see.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is, of course, KBOO 90.7 FM. The absolute best.
Here we go again? You better watch it, buddy.
Watch it, buddy.
Yeah, you just better watch
it. How many long digressions have we gone off on that have begun with, oh, well, back in the 60s?
Well, not many, actually.
Wow, okay. All right. This is KBOO, the best radio station you'll ever find anywhere in the universe.
And that's not true.
It is true.
It's not true.
This is better than all the rest. As far as we know, there are no more radio stations, at least that we've discovered.
Well, that's true.
Outside the planet Earth, so I feel pretty comfortable with that statement. This is the best. Here it is, right here.
All right.
And this dialogue we're having right now, this is the quintessence. This is the peak.
Yeah, this is really good
peak
stuff.
Peak of intellectual exchange.
And let's tell people how much money we make.
Okay, moving on. All right. A bold claim, says our engineer, Ray. I stand by it, Ray. All right, we have an interesting show for you today. Towards the end of June, once again, the Proud Boys marched through the streets of Portland.
Yes.
Now, if you're not aware who the Proud Boys are, they are a group of right-wing white nationalists.
Yes.
Predominantly, although there are some folks of color in the ranks of the Proud Boys, it must
really?
Be said. Yes, there are.
I didn't
I have
know
seen
that.
Them. I've taken photos of them.
Okay.
But mostly...
white guys.
Mostly white guys, mostly nativists. And they are part of the burgeoning right-wing movement that has felt empowered to blossom under the reign of President Trump.
Well, what are the Patriot Prayer then?
Patriot Prayer is yet another right-wing white nationalist group.
Are they the same, or they work together, or what?
They have been known to show up at the same events.
Curiously.
I don't know the extent to which the two groups actively collaborate or anything. I really don't know.
No, and if you knew, they'd have to kill you.
Yeah, they probably so, yeah. I don't know if that's true.
I made that up. That's a calumny. Okay.
So the last few times that the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer and others of their ilk have marched here in Portland, they have been confronted by a sizable contingent of leftists of various stripes, among whom are Antifa.
Yes.
Antifa is short for anti-fascist, and I apologize to those of you listening if this is going over last year's work, but we have to set the stage here. Antifa stands for anti-fascist. They are a pretty amorphous group, as I understand. They have no official structure or organization, no official hierarchy, but they show up to combat fascists when they march through the street.
Well, and more or less, they mask up.
They mask up, more or less. And I use the term combat because that appears to be a primary tactic. From what I've learned of Antifa, they don't trust the institutions of liberal democracy.
Imagine that.
And they have believe that our democratic institutions have failed to protect the marginalized communities that the white nationalists are oppressing. And that's why they, Antifa, are out in the streets resisting. And as I mentioned, their tactic seems to be direct confrontation with the fascists.
Well, in this last event, this Saturday, what, the 29th?
Yes.
I sort of got an inside view because I got the earlier pamphlet, which I don't think a lot of people got.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was they were going to imitate this British lefty who threw milkshakes at
Nigel Farage.
Yes.
And some others.
Yeah. And they were going to make milkshakes and throw them. And they did. They made milkshakes.
Vegan milkshakes, of course.
Yeah, of course. And then started a rumor by the police, I might add, that they mixed instant cement in the milkshakes.
Right, which turned out to be completely false.
Absolutely a lie.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they seem to have a target. And I want to, this guy I hope to get on the air sometime, Andy Ngo?
No, Andy Ngo.
Andy Ngo?
Yeah.
No G.
The G is silent, yeah.
Okay, Andy Ngo. And he is remarkably successful at self-promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'm concerned about is when one puts together an attack, which is a physical attack, first of all, I have moral qualms with that because I think that's not a good way to present oneself as a public citizen and as a supporter of good causes. Apart from that question, the philosophical question involved in that and the very physical question involved in that, what happened with this guy was he was attacked. Apparently, he's been annoying people for a while, I guess, in the Antifa scene. He was attacked. The milkshakes were poured on him. People hit him, allegedly. I didn't see that. I don't know that.
But he was hospitalized in the wake of this attack.
So let's say that did happen. And he turned that into a triumph. He first showed up on Lars Larson's right-wing talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got an article in the Wall Street Journal, a major editorial piece, "A Leftist Mob Attacked Me in Portland." And this was Wednesday, July 3rd. And I ran into that by looking at the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gee, this is tactically kind of weird. It doesn't make sense to turn a person like this, I don't know anything about him beyond his right-wing style and position, or whether or not he's annoying, I don't know anything about that. But they turned him into a martyr.
They did, unsurprisingly.
And why? To whose advantage is that, if not his?
Well, it's to the right wing's advantage.
I think so.
There's been a great deal of energy expended on the right, and this extends to office holders on the right to characterize Antifa,
mm-hmm.
Or to equate them with white nationalists on the other side, as if to say they are equivalent opposing forces.
Well, that's what Trump tried to do.
It's what Trump tried to do also in Charlottesville, and I think even the most cursory analysis reveals that statement to be false. There is no equivalence between what Antifa are trying to do and what white nationalists are trying to do. The unfortunate overlap between the two groups perhaps lies in their choice of tactics.
Yes.
I feel pretty comfortable, Joe, in saying that both you and I resonate philosophically with Antifa. We should all be anti-fascists,
yeah.
Should we not?
Yeah.
I think where we differ is in the choice of using violence as a tool to confront white nationalists.
Well, I think violence is a tool in certain circumstances, but the most effective tool, particularly when you're a part of a very vocal minority, is nonviolent resistance. And
agreed.
This was proven historically in the United States over and over again.
Agreed. Speaking for myself, I take issue with Antifa's choice of tactics and their decision to violently confront white nationalists. I think that that is, at first, counterproductive. Is in no way going to shift the narrative. Although I suppose if you're a member of a group, however loosely organized, that believes our democratic institutions have failed, you know, then perhaps this appears to be one of the only options left to you.
Well, wait, I believe our democratic institutions have failed, and I just don't think, I can't imagine myself taking to the street with an AK-47, sorry.
So, first of all, the choice of violence to confront white nationalists is counterproductive. It doesn't achieve anything. Secondly, it invites crackdowns from the police, and I think it's clear, at least from my observations of these confrontations here in Portland, that our police force is more inclined to defend the white nationalists than they are to defend the leftists.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely correct. And thirdly, it plays right into the right's hands. It gives them a boogeyman to point at and say, look at the violent left. Look at what the tolerant left is doing.
Mm.
Now, all of that said, it's not okay to beat up journalists. It's not okay to beat up anybody.
Beat up people.
Yes. And especially a journalist in this sort of context. That's not okay. Whoever beat up Andy Ngo, that was a crime. Now, accounts of exactly what went down differ. There's about 30 seconds of footage taken by Oregonian reporter Jim Ryan,
mm-hmm.
which shows Ngo being attacked.
Is there any question about this being attacked?
No.
Okay.
No, he was attacked by leftist counter-protesters on June 29th.
Could they have been agents provocateurs?
Perhaps, but there's also a number of first-hand accounts, and we're going to talk with one of those folks here in a few minutes.
Okay.
There are a number of first-hand accounts of the situation leading up to that point, where it very much appears that Mr. Ngo was attempting to provoke a confrontation. Perhaps, this is speculation about his motives, perhaps to engender the situation where he is able to turn himself into a martyr. He's already raised more than six figures over the internet, ostensibly to help him in his medical recovery from this attack.
Oh, well.
And as you mentioned, he's achieved a national platform through the Wall Street Journal as a result of being attacked. But whether or not he was provoking the leftist counter-protesters, it's still not okay to beat him up.
Well, it's irrelevant. I mean, in fact, there is a need, and I'm going to say this a lot of times, and people are going to get probably bored with it or annoyed with it, but nonviolence training and the very specific tactics to win the day work. They have been proven to work. Where they don't work, of course, is where there's an armed fascist movement to shoot you down. That there would be too much loss of life for it to be effectively used. There you have to play other kinds of games. But in America, even at this time, the use of nonviolent resistance is an effective tool to employ to gain support from those who are on the sidelines or who are sympathetic or even those who are pretty much opposed to you. You gain respect, you gain the notion of dignity. A lot of good things happen consequent to that.
I agree.
So, you know, that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
However, I certainly am sympathetic to the notion of activism against fascism.
Oh, absolutely. As I said before, we should all be anti-fascist, should we not?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, Mr. Ngo, it also must be said, has a history of provoking leftists here in Portland. He has also gone so far as to dox a number of members of Antifa. Now, doxing, if you're not familiar with the term.
I'm not.
Is revealing personal information about somebody and publishing it on the internet.
Oh, really?
For example, many members of Antifa prefer to conceal their identities, probably because they don't believe they can count on the protection of the justice system, and they're probably right. So doxing means revealing things like someone's true name, their address, their phone number, their email address.
Oh,
so
as in
so
documenting.
Yeah, doxing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So this is obviously a pretty underhanded tactic, I would say.
Well, Outing people in any context is pretty underhand.
I would agree, yes. So Mr. No has a history of inciting and provoking left-wing forces here in Portland. And according to many firsthand accounts, provoked or attempted to provoke the attack that eventually came on him. I'm not excusing that attack. Again, in no uncertain terms, this program condemns the use of violence against anyone, particularly a journalist in the context of covering a political demonstration.
Even if that journalist is a right-wing journalist.
Yes, even if he's a jerk. Okay. All right. So that said, at the end of last week's show, Joe requested that people who had witnessed these events reach out to us, and one of our listeners did, in fact, do that, and we're going to bring him on the air right now. His name is Robbie. Robbie, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. If you could, why don't you tell us a little bit about the confrontation between the counter-protesters and Mr. No? Set the table for us, as it were.
Yeah, I showed up there, and I guess just to give a little background on me, I go to these protests and I confront Patriot Prayer or Proud Boys wherever they are. I have a specific tactic that I think you would both agree is somewhat useful when we deal with the far right. I preach the Bible and the Constitution to
that must be confusing.
Well, it shows a hypocrisy, and I know a lot of people, and one thing that I call myself is a Christian anarchist, particularly because it makes Christians pretty upset to learn that Jesus was the first anarchist. But, you know, I don't got to go into that, but these are the tactics that I use. You know, when it came to these attacks, I am on the understanding, I've been here in Portland for a long time, and I've watched a lot of situations arise where a number of years ago, back when Obama was a president, towards the Portland Action Lab, which was what Occupy Portland turned into, one of the reasons why people started masking up heavily was because there was a case where the Portland police came to an individual's work at a bike store and arrested him because he was at a protest, and they said that they had video footage of him with his bike hitting it. So, and this is just kind of... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm getting a little feedback, so I apologize. But basically, this is just something that I would like to tell, you know, your listeners. These are the things that we do now. I don't particularly do them, but, you know, the police showing up at your work, you know, days later, I'm talking, this was a week or two after that particular instance in 2013. But basically, you know, this is what it's come to now. And now we have the individuals from the far right coming out into Portland and basically provoking this stuff. So,
As I understand it, most of them seem to come from Washington State. Is that true?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, Vancouver, Joey Gibson is from Vancouver. And in fact, I'm pretty sure there's been quite a few individuals in the Patriot Prayer, I don't know if it's the, you know, Northwest chapter. They all are from outside of Oregon. And what goes into it now is we're watching how the police interact with protesters. I had once called in and brought up how there was a provocateur in one thing that I was trying to organize once. The Portland police are not on our side, so that is a lot of what we are witnessing now. And so in terms of the violence, you know, I showed up this particular day on the 29th, and I didn't know who Andy No was, but I got there right at the start of it, and I saw a group of activists telling this journalist to leave. They were, you know, they kind of formed a wall. They were trying to block him from recording. And he had had goggles on, Andy No, at this time. He had had some weird, you know how people always like to LARP at these things. Now they dress up and play, pretend soldiers. But anyway, Andy had some weird type of goggles on his head, and he was like trying to push his way through these protesters who were saying leave. Andy No, you know, and one thing that you didn't explain about Andy No is he's actually gone on Twitter saying that these he's saying very transphobic things. So that's a part of why they were very upset at him. But as I showed up there, I see them telling him to leave, and he's not. He keeps trying to push him through, and he gets his first milkshake. I saw that happen, and it was very interesting because when I saw the first milkshake hit him, it looked as if he was crying, and he was kind of recording himself, and I was like, is he crying? anyway, towards the end of it, you know, we see his puppy eyes, you know, and he has like a black eye and all this stuff. But one thing about Andy Ngo is I don't know if he was the individual that said he got hit by the cement milkshake. But, you know, this was after he was told to leave. He went on Twitter the day before and said, "I'm afraid to come out to the Portland protest because there might be violence." So he knew what was going to happen. And I'm not saying that that's right. I'm not saying that that's wrong. But I find it very ironic that for an individual that went on Twitter and said that this trans community that have been facing attacks, there's been killings of these individuals. He goes on there and he says, you know, these are hoax attacks. Staged attacks, essentially.
Now you mentioned, can I interrupt for just a minute? You mentioned that he had been asked to leave. Who is it that asked him to leave, and in what area was he asked to leave?
Well, when I showed up, he was being asked to leave by the protesters.
Right.
And again, I didn't know who he was beforehand, but after all this, I went on the Twitters and I saw there was, you know, indeed people saying, "Don't come out here, Andy." Know, like,
he's under no obligation to leave at the request of protesters.
Anybody.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, though, Joe and Abe. I mean, would you go down into a group of people that are opposed of your ideals and your ideologies and say that, you know, they're violent? Like, would you go into the midst of that?
I have in the past when I was young and foolish.
Yeah, I interviewed some white nationalists last August when they marched on the waterfront. Now, I didn't go into amongst them and provoke them. I just went amongst them and asked questions.
Right. Well, this individual continued to record people, and I don't know if you know, but recording people when they ask you not to is kind of a confrontation.
It is.
On top of that, you didn't get attacked when you went out there because you were, yeah. So
well, I wasn't looking for a fight, and I think that Andy Ngo probably was looking for a fight.
Well, that's what exactly happened, because when I saw him get hit with this milkshake, I really saw him cry, and I was like, I actually, and this sounds really bad, I wasn't sure, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know he was a conservative person. I was like, who is this guy who just got milkshake? You know, why is he so upset? And honestly, that was because of the media outlash, you know, Senator Ted Cruz asking Ted Wheeler to, you know, figure out what's going on. Why do we let these, you know, conservative journalists get attacked? And it's just unfortunate that what was brought up was, you know, his comment about staged or hoaxed attacks. And then basically coming out here and recording that. He had the sole intention of doing this. Now, you know, naturally, me and you, we can see that this isn't, you know, they fell for the bait, I guess, would be the lack of the thing. I don't condemn anybody's activism. I think that we all have a side. I am a Christian anarchist. I think that people are going to be doing the things that they are going to do, and I have no say in stopping that. I think there's a natural flow of energy, and so there's going to have to be people that do the dirty work that a lot of the people that are nonviolent aren't going to be ready for whenever, you know, the system entirely lifts off its mask and we realize that, you know, this is indeed a fascist state. When they start coming after activists, that might be a very real thing. So I'm not against the tactics that were used. I try to go out there and prevent what happens by using the words. And so, you know, that's where I come from. So, but basically, Andy Ngo getting this media attention is exactly what he wanted, as you said. I could carry on to other aspects of this, but watching Andy Ngo get this coverage was, I don't know, he got six figures over this, and that's to me is what's remarkable. I mean, he was already kind of a well-paid conservative, but watching the funds pour into him was very, very, I mean, he got a black eye, and now, you know, he has over $100,000. That's remarkable.
Well, he claims that his injuries were more severe.
And we don't know.
We don't know.
I wanted to comment on something here that comes out of, it's awkward. I don't want to sound patronizing and using my age and education and so on to preach. But I have to some extent. There is, what's going on right now is this kind of propaganda fight between younger groups of younger, not necessarily young, groups of people who take to the streets. This is something that has historically had significance in all sorts of situations, most notably, most memorably in modern times in the rise of Nazism in Germany. And the question of what is or is not a victory in those street fights, those street brawls, it could be decided physically or it can be decided in media or other forms. The awareness that what you're doing is a performance is key to this. When one masks up or doesn't, when one has a sign or it doesn't, et cetera, those are all acts of performance, whether or not one thinks one is being authentic. And it's really important to think about what you're doing, why you're doing it, what the goals are, what do you want to have other people, people who don't know anything or even are opposed to you, are going to see or think is consequent to what you're saying or doing. And many, many times there's been enormous success with that. However, all of it depends on a rational discourse, a certain level of discipline, self-imposed, that makes it possible to have those events. And unless you're being fired upon directly by authorities or crazy mobs or whatever, that kind of discipline helps to get across a message. And I'm concerned that we're all losing control in this circumstance go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say, you know, like, and ideally that's great. You know, like, I wish we could this idea that it's being recorded.
Well, everything is being recorded.
And so, right. But I'm also, you know, you said it with age. I'm also, I don't know if it's aware enough, but people are going to do what they're going to do. There's provocateurs, there's individuals who are actually threatened by these individuals when they're down there. And so it's a lot of instances where we don't have control. We never did have control. We like to think that we can have control and, you know, we want to stop, we want to coordinate all this stuff. But this is why I go out there, is because I have to go out there and try to, articulate that message. That a lot of times people on our left, you know, we get caught up calling the police pigs, you know, we call the fascists Nazis, which they totally are. But when you can go up to them and you can say, hey, this is why you are racist. You know, the Operation Fast and Furious, the ATF gun walking scandal, the climate problem. These are why these people are migrants, you know, and U.S. imperialism ultimately, or the corporations which have exploited those nations that they're coming from and made them poor. Colonization basically created everything that we're witnessing right now. So like when you can go into it step by step, they can't address it. And so ideally it's like, yeah, you know, I would love to be able to have those educational moments, but I've also seen how messy it gets on the street, and there is no control over that. So when it comes down to it, the best that we can do as individuals is try to do what we think is right, and hopefully that can be leading by an example.
Well, right. I understand what you're saying, but I don't agree that it's uncontrollable. I think it's ultimately obviously uncontrollable, but to a great degree, discipline, shared understanding, shared agreement, on tactics and so on, can make a very big difference. And I think what we're really seeing right now is in the most negative sense, not the positive sense, a kind of street anarchy. And that can become very dangerous. And that's all I have to say about that.
These are anarchists, though. I mean, this is their philosophy. The philosophy, the political philosophy of anarchy is essentially if everybody is taken care of, it's a philosophical question. Do people need laws to be good people? That is something that anarchists would say, that, you know, a community creates this. We don't need these written laws. In my personal philosophy, it's that, you know, I don't think laws are made to be broken. I think laws are made and then exceptions are found. Essentially, because we have written law, it's counterintuitive to our progress as, you know, intelligent collective individuals. So this is my, you know, I just be careful with the word street anarchy, because to a lot of people who don't particularly listen to KABU, people who are on mass media outlets, these individuals hear the word anarchy and think exactly what, you know, whatever the 29th, you know, the protest represents on the mass media scale. That's, to them, that's anarchy. And ultimately what I find is just, it was a really sad day.
Well, there isn't
a provoked attack.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of education about left-wing philosophies generally, certainly not about anarchy in this society. another problem that is really important is the notion of what constitutes discipline. Self-discipline, group discipline, agreements about what will or will not be done, whether it's silent, whether it's... All of that went by the boards a few years ago. I first saw it when there was one of the, typically, and I will acknowledge this, boring May Day marches. And the front end of it was seized by a group of people, don't know who they were. But they led the group in an entirely different path than the one that had been agreed upon. And they eventually, I think if this is the same one, sat down in the middle of Burnside Street. They did not have demands. They did not have requests. They were only being obstreperous and inconvenient. The then police chief was actually faced with what to do with this. She had not planned on this. In the end, of course, she had a bunch of people arrested. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But it is not part of a development for a political organization that can withstand itself in our particular culture. And I'm worried because I'm worried because it legitimizes the very real violence of the right-wing authorities and of the right-wing in general.
I just wanted to mention a lot of times what will happen with the unplanned is these emergent strategies come out. That's what shut down the ICE building for over 10 days. This Occupy ICE thing happened because of, you know, random occurrences. Because if you try to organize right now, and this is something that I try to tell people, most of Americans don't want to believe it, but if you were to get together, start trying to organize, mobilize your community to do just some, and let's just say you get the permits, let's say you get all this stuff, you do it by the books, right? You're going to be infiltrated, if not by the police, by somebody else, it's going to result right down into chaos. Basically, when Occupy ICE happened, that was something that was random. That was a non-planned for situation where basically three, four older women, I wish I knew their names, they were so amazing, but they went down there and they just had enough, they shut down the thing, and then that call out is what created that. So it's a double-edged sword, because I understand you're trying to get everybody to be, you know, on the same page. You don't want to see the violence. I don't want to see the violence, but ultimately, it is beyond our control, and all I can do is go out there and try to do what I think is, you know, working. Unfortunately, on the 29th, you know, this individual, No, came out there, provoked a bunch of people, gave them the bait, you know, got milkshaked. The police fabricated an entire cement milkshake story. And then, you know, Ted Cruz is saying that, you know, Antifa is running
violently through
in reality, it's the Patriot Prayer.
Well, I agree with you, but there's one important thing that happened here. There was a plan to milkshake somebody. That was a real thing. Somebody prepared milkshakes to attack others. And it may be seen as a symbolic act, but, you know, it's violence. And when you move into that realm, you step out of the legitimate discourse in this society as it's understood. It's not a debatable thing. It's the way the law works.
Well, I mean, the law is a very interesting thing. You know who Tiny is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
So he was recorded by the Portland police officers kicking somebody in the face while they were on the ground. And the Portland police chose to say, oh, well, that was a mutual combat situation. Basically, both sides of that party aren't. So Tiny, even though he had a warrant, the police chose not to do.
Well, you're absolutely right.
This is a buildup. This is months and years of buildup. You know.
Yeah, but
so
you're
there
talking.
There was another instance where let me just finish really quickly. There was another instance where the Portland police had, and on May 1st, just this recently, somebody was hit with a baton and knocked out. I believe the back was broken. Serious injuries by a Patriot Prayer member. The police aren't even looking. There's not an investigation into it. But now what we're witnessing is unfairness. And so when you're on that level and you see this unfairness, I think it's something different from where you are and being like, oh, why is it violent? It's just like, this has been a built up thing. And I'm not for it. I'm not, I'm not going to say that what they're doing, I'm still on my side. And I know that you're on that side as well, but you know, of the Antifa, not on the violence, but ultimately, you know, this has been a long built up thing. And I do believe the Portland police is helping push it into that thing. And so what I was going to say is, when you do try to organize individuals together, it will be, I mean, it's sad watching it happen. And that's why there is security culture, particularly with anarchists, because they do get infiltrated like this. And so
well, that's been true in time immemorial.
Yeah.
It's always the case.
But, Well, I think we're going to leave it there. Robbie, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. We appreciate your perspective. And also, I think it's really clever to confront right-wingers with biblical verse. That's good on you for that.
Boy, you can't be more annoying than that.
It makes Christians and anarchists mad at the same time. It's pretty amazing.
It's a win-win. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Joe and Abe. I love the show. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
And thanks for calling in.
Okay. Well, Larry had some firsthand perspective of the events of that day. We should mention...
I was invited to go by some people.
We should have gone.
No.
We should mention that we have reached out to Rose City Antifa and have been in negotiations with them to appear on this program. Logistically, it didn't work to make a live appearance today, but they have agreed to record a pre-recorded segment with us, and we are negotiating that and hope to be able to bring that to you soon.
I think that's important. I think that there's too much secondhand and guesswork involved in all of this. It bothers me.
All right. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. Coming up this morning on 9 on Alternative Radio, we'll take a look at the evidence that everything from infant mortality to life expectancy can be linked to the level of economic inequality within a given population. Of course. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein discusses the xenophobic turn of U.S. immigration policy under the Trump administration. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D.May Roberts talks with author Niecy Shawl about their epic debut novel about an imaginary utopia called Everfair. At 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews New York artist Nicola Lopez about her print show, Hybrids, at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. And don't forget, you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or as a podcast on iTunes and Google Play. And we want to remind you that all of these programs, indeed, this radio station's very existence, is made possible by your support, and we are grateful. If you're not a member, go to KBOO.fM and click on Donate. It's really
easy. Yeah, let's go back to the phones. I think the person on hold is Beverly.
Yes. I needed to tell you, Joe, that I was also there. And there was people there who were making soy milkshakes to give out to people. Mm-hmm. So they didn't.
Oh, you mean like to give out to drink?
To drink. I had.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
And I just think it's important to not jump to conclusions because I think this is important. I came in late. But did you know about his background? The person that
we talked about his.
Oh, you do. Okay, yeah. Great. That's I can think that's important. So that's what I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
I wanted you to know.
You know, I don't believe that those milkshakes were produced simply for people to drink. I believe that they were intended to be launched as missiles by some members of the counter-protesting crowd. That was made explicit in social media. They weren't just to drink.
No, are you serious?
I am absolutely serious. Yes.
Okay. Well, you're an idiot.
Okay. Thank you for the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. You can also write to us at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or send us a tweet at HonestAbe72.
We've got some other callers?
Yeah. Warren, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I've appreciated the discussion today. Something I would like to add, I think one thing that's been largely missing is a coordinated effort to do trainings around nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think there's a need for elders such as yourself to step up and do more coordinated trainings on how to do nonviolent civil disobedience, how to be more organized in the strategy on the streets, how to be more better communications between the law enforcement and the protesters. And I think that's been one of the biggest lacking elements. I would also add an unsubstantiated rumor that came out after the November 30th protest that we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of, that had excellent level of trainings of nonviolent civil disobedience that happened for a year and a half before that event happened. But at the protests that led after that event, there was a movement to coordinate the more black bloc tactics. And the rumor that I like to highlight is that manual for black bloc tactics came out of a right-wing organization to help promote those kind of tactics, that street level combative tactics that really ends up taking away energy from the movements that actually have a chance of actually pushing back against state violence in the U.S.
Well, there's only, to my point of view, there's only two reasons to demonstrate. One is to demonstrate, that is to put your body on the line. The other reason is propaganda. And propaganda is not a bad word, it's not a good word. It is the effort to convince other people of what you're doing, that you are right, and that the ideas that you are supporting are legitimate and even perhaps worthy. And we're not at that place now anymore. It's now a very weird environment, highly toxic, and I'm beginning to think potentially very dangerous.
I think he's right, yes, though, sir. Joe. I think you should lead some nonviolent resistance training.
Well, I did that for years, but I don't know that anyone would want to hear it.
I think it's time for you to come out of retirement, man.
Oh, come on.
Yes, sir. I agree. Yep. I will second and third that, and I think that is a big element that's needed right now. And I don't know. I don't remember the name of the organization that led the nonviolent civil disobedience training before November.
Well, there's a lot of good organizations. Many of them are from the peace churches, ranging from the Catholic worker movement to the old-fashioned traditional Protestant peace churches, several Jewish organizations, several non-religious organizations, American Friends Service Committee, for example. All of them have people who are, I think, probably much more competent at doing that than I am, and all of them are very sincere and are willing, I'm sure, if contacted, to help in this effort.
Well, currently, the people that are aggravated with Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys, the people that want to protest against that, their outlet is Antifa. Their outlet.
I understand that, and we're trying to understand them better and to support them to a great degree.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate it. Let's go to Brian. Good morning. Brian, are you there? Oh, we lost Brian. Brian, if you want to call us back, please do so. Mike, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, guys.
Hey.
What's on your mind, Mike?
I have one quick point to make, but it's a very important point, and that is when anybody shows up at those things with a weapon, AR-15, club, whatever, they need to be marked and labeled for what they are, cowards. They are cowards.
I would agree with that. Why do you need to bring a weapon to a political demonstration? Have you not abdicated all sense of Americanness by doing so?
Oh, this is American as apple pie, man.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would seem to me... Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Well, he makes a very good point, right?
No, I was being sarcastic.
The presence of weapons at political events is anathema to representative democracy. But, as we were discussing earlier with Robbie, I think there are a lot of folks within the Antifa movement who believe that representative democracy has gone bust and violence is the only tool left.
I'm hoping we can really talk with not just one person, but with a variety of people from that movement, because I'm sure there are more than one position. I also am fairly sure that it is probably anarcho-syndicalist tradition that brings them to that place. Plus, the legitimate, and let's make this clear, the legitimate fear of operatives from the police and other agencies and the right, and the fact of the matter is that masking up, that disguising one's identity in some circumstances is perfectly legitimate.
Yeah, I used to it used to be that my position against first the Black Bloc and then Antifa was that, hey, if you're going to be out there making a political statement, have the courage to show your face. I'm reconsidering that position because being a part of Antifa at a gathering like this, the odds that you might be cracked down on by the cops are pretty high.
Yeah.
And in that case, you might not want your identity to be readily
known. No, and I agree with that. I think what we need to understand, though, are the term spectacle. You know, what you're trying to create is a spectacle, which is a kind of entertainment, a kind of theater with a political, very strong political message. And when you do that, you step onto the public stage, whether or not you think you're doing that or not. And then the question is, what's your best theater? What's your best tactics? What do you want to emphasize? What do you want to not emphasize? And how many of you are there? And what are your disciplines? All of that right now seems to be, if you follow me.
Yeah. Let's go back to Brian. Looks like we got him back. Brian, good morning.
Hello.
Joe,
Abe.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
I'm going to pull over just in case I don't get...
Please.
Good man.
Please.
Thank you for that.
Well, do not talk and drive.
the Bluetooth is rotting my brain as we speak, so I'm legal, even if
Hey, man, there's so many things rotting your brain. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's right. Well, maybe it's realigning things. Anyway, to the point. So I was there.
Okay.
And I went down with the Democratic Socialists of America. We're a little contingent that joined others there.
You know, I've been thinking about joining DSA. That's interesting you bring
up. Oh, yeah.
That.
No, it's they follow Robert's Rules of Orders and have lots of committees. It's
oh, no, not that. Not a committee thing.
You're not selling it. Anyway, you're not really
putting
the gloss on it for us. Go ahead.
Capacity, right? And that's my point. As much as we might loathe or love Robert's Rules of Orders. But my point to these, one, that it was suggested that we should enjoy these milkshakes, but if we were inspired to throw them, that was an option. So, no, Joe, you are not an idiot in that regard. So I think there were some of these suggestions being made.
Well, but there was a poster. I was shown a poster that said that. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, but the major thrust of my call is this. All right, so the Proud Boys and the cops, their tactic is to goad those of us who are anti-fascists, whether we are ardent pacifists and would never want to show up because we're afraid of just seeing the cops, you know, dressed as the way they are, so, you know, hyper-militaristically, or if we're all the way on the other end and we're black blocs and we've had enough of being doxxed and we just feel the emotion of oppression from Proud Boy and police. So they are, so whether it's testosterone or mindset or just an analysis that violence has in the past been a really crucial part of social change, which I believe is true.
Unfortunately, it is. Yes.
I know. So this is what I propose. It's kind of good cop, bad cop within anti-fascist. And I'm sure I'm not blazing any new trail by making these suggestions, but it occurs to me that there needs to be a lot of wonderful discussion between people who think that violence is a worthy tactic and groups of people who believe that violence is never to be initiated. It's, you know, spousal abuse, drug abuse, suicide.
I'm sorry, we had to.
We're going to have to. You broke the only national rule we have to follow.
That's right. Okay. That's too bad. That was a good call.
No, it was a good call.
Yeah. Jack writes into the Facebook page to say, reciting Christian scripture and annoying both fascists and anarchists proves what I've been saying for some time. Christianity is perhaps the most serviceable of all mythologies.
Well, that's true. I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah, we won't go down that particular rabbit hole right now.
A lot of people were murdered by Christians, by the way.
Ross, you're next. Good morning.
Yes, well, this is amazing that this kind of discussion still goes on and gets weirder and weirder. I want to raise a question concerned before this demonstration happened. Of course, I wasn't interested in going. The KABU advertised the demonstration ahead.
Yep.
And I think that's worth discussing. I don't, whose demonstration was it? I always like to know whose demonstration is this and
who's in charge.
Rules of conduct am I working with, and what are the rules that we're going to join together collectively? If I don't know that, I don't go. And I had the experience, of course, of we had wonderful May Day marches, and then the May Day organizing people welcome the Black Bloc people and all that. But they're not going to be part of the discipline. So we have a lot of confused thinking of the left, and one of them has to be, you know, what are the rules of demonstration, and who is who, and what is the purpose? And I know I heard one of the KABU stalwarts actually say that, well, the purpose of demonstration is to have the maximized disruption. No, the purpose of a demonstration is to win hearts and minds and accomplish some objective, but it is never, the purpose is not the violence itself. It's never the disruption itself. And there's some people who are just simply drawn to that. Well, I asked one of the Antifa people, well, why don't you organize your own demonstration and call people to come out and bring their weapons? Go and do it, but don't come to our other demonstrations And another thing is that Antifa, they do not, the ones that I've talked, they do not even identify themselves as left or socialist in normal ways that I've heard. And so meanwhile, we've got a growing left, a huge democratic socialist organization. Let's not get diverted into following them and tailgating on their demonstration.
Let me jump in and address some of your points here. There's a fundamental problem with organization that comes up here, because obviously when white nationalists, when fascists come to march in the streets of our town, I think it's an entirely appropriate response to say up and show up and go, no, you're not welcome here. The problem being is that there's a pretty wide spectrum on the left that feels that way and feels pretty strongly about it, and they all tend to show up. I mean, that was a very loose coalition of counter-protesters that showed up this time, and it's more or less the same crowd that shows up every time. You've got Antifa, you've got the Democratic Socialists, you've got more mainstream leftists, you've got all sorts of people, religious and non-religious, and on and on and on. You know, trying to establish a universal set, a universal code of behavior for everybody who shows up to oppose the radical right, that's a tall order, and I don't know if we're going to be able to get there simply due to the sort of the dissociative, anarchic quality that characterizes a lot of these opposition groups.
And also the need for spontaneity and rapidity of organization. But I have to say that all of the really dignified stuff, and that's not always necessary, and it's not always wise to be dignified, but all of the dignified events take a great deal of organizing, take a great deal of cooperation, take buy-in from much more conservative people than the people who are generally organizing the events, and a lot of compromises involved. So there's a lot of political discussion that needs to be done or is being done, and I'm not aware of it, and that's certainly very possible. And I think that dialogue should be, this station can help facilitate that, and I think it's important that dialogue take place, both in meetings and in living rooms and in bars, wherever. And I think that can be very fruitful. I think what is not fruitful is outraged reaction without any regard to the propagandistic impact or the existential questions involved.
All right, well, thank you very much for the call. We want to try and get some more folks in here before the end. JF sent us a tweet. At HonestAbe72, he tweets, "Unfortunately, using violence as a first response feeds into the ultra-right's narrative, as illustrated in this case with Mr. No, the right-wing's poster boy du jour." I think that's exactly the point we've been trying to make.
Yeah, that's the point I was making,
yeah.
For sure.
By responding violently, however annoying the provocateur.
Or even justified.
You're playing right into their hands. So let's go to Oliver. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you? I'll try to just be brief. I have a really unique perspective that because I have been standing with Antifa for years. I looked Jeremy Christian in the eyeballs at Montebello Park, and he later went to slash and kill on the MAX train. So I think it's really important to frame this discussion into what's happening is self-defense. And it's psychologically viewed as self-defense. I look at it as physically self-defending the community of Portland.
Well, I can see how that perception would be validated in many ways.
Yeah, but the video of the attack on Mr. No does not look like self-defense to me.
Well, now listen. The one thing you guys, you're falling right into the honey traps national.
No, not. We're saying it's not okay to beat someone up. That's what we're saying.
But okay. Number one, did you watch the whole video or did you see the splice that Fox News has been playing?
No, I watched the whole video directly from the Oregonian reporter who shot it, and I watched other angles taken by people in the crowd.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to jump in and start working criminal defense for the actions that went down, but I do want the point to be made that it is very critical that we have some form of opposition to these domestic terrorists that are coming from Vancouver.
I agree.
This is the Portland community standing with the Portland community. Now, with that said, I don't support DSA. I think these guys are con artists, and they're co-opting the Antifa movement. They're making it political.
Okay.
National corporate c- interest. I have to, these are Democrat operatives.
No. I have to interrupt here.
Coming in and do that.
I have to interrupt you because listen. This is important. I'm sure you're sincere, but what you're doing is you're engaging in a peculiarly political narrative, which is an attack essentially on the left. Let me finish. DSA. I know the people who founded it. I know a lot about it. DSA has never been, by its policies and by its writings and by its membership, an organization deliberately doing the things you're suggesting. It just doesn't happen.
That's not true. Well, and I know everybody involved as well. I'm old school Portland. Don't BS me, Joe. This is not your editorial in the Oregonian here. I'm on the ground. I'm in the streets. And I know that all of this is back and forth. What's happening is playing out on Portland theater because of this behind the scenes, back and forth, little schoolhouse drama that DSA's been stirring up. There's a reason Joey Gibson was in front of DSA headquarters. There's a reason these things are happening. DSA is cattle prodding them, and I don't support that. But I do support Antifa, who I was standing with for years before it's been co-opted. So thank you. I'll chime out.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. Francis, you're next.
Hi.
Hi. Got to make it fast.
Well, I wish I could remember the quote from Grace Lee Boggs. She was just... You had a tape of her interview the other day on cable.
Yeah, she's great. She was great.
In which she, when she talked about the need, the reason why we are nonviolent and why we will continue to be nonviolent, because the mission is to end violence against people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to recognize the humanity in the other. And Antifa, I'm sorry, reminds me of COINTELPRO. And that's just because I'm from way back when. And I can remember thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the streets demonstrating against the Vietnam War, and there was not one moment of violence.
Right, but
and
you're,
I would like to know what Antifa represents. What is it for?
COINTELPRO was an organized effort by the FBI to expose
right.
African American activists. I don't think Antifa
right.
is anything like that.
No, I don't know what Antifa is.
Well, you just likened them
for.
To COINTELPRO.
I don't know. I recall COINTELPRO
okay.
when I think of their tactics.
Hmm.
I don't know what do they represent. What are they for?
Okay,
is it just what they're against, or what are they
Francis,
for?
Here's what's happened here, I think. You've confused two things, which is easy to do in this alphabet language.
I'm not confused. I want to know what Antifa represents. What are they for?
Well, we're inviting them to be on the air. We're inviting them to have
discourse. But they have to
discourse.
Take it first?
Yeah, we're going to do a pre-recorded segment with them.
And we are interested. We want to be a voice for everybody in the left. And we'll work hard to do that. But I'm just very frightened by the tendency we all have, and I do this too, to throw around our understandings without having any kind of real root in the facts. COINTELPRO, just to be clear, was an FBI program essentially targeted against black nationalists, but others as well, including white people.
It wasn't It was a
J. Edgar Hoover FBI thing. And
right.
a fascist thing.
And what
thing.
They did was pretend like they were involved in some cause and end up disrupting it from within.
Well, but that was one of their many tactics. I mean, many
right.
tactics.
And representing themselves as being from a cause and causing disturbances.
Well, there are always,
and then
Francis, there are always agents provocateurs in every movement. This
right.
is something you have
that's
to expect
more,
and consider.
Right, exactly. So I want to know why they exist. Are they here just to oppose, or are they here?
Who's
the
they in that sense? I'm sorry.
Antifa. What is their goal just to?
Well, I believe
resist?
They're. I believe they're authentic. I believe that most of them are
I do
sincere.
Too, but I want to know what their mission is.
Well, tune in, and hopefully we'll get that question answered once we speak to them.
All right, but nonviolence is the only way that any of this will ever end.
Agreed.
We agree.
I think we agree on
all
that.
All right, then.
Francis, thank you, care. As always, for your contribution.
Yeah, and appropriately enough, I think that brings us to a close of our show.
That was a really excellent program. Wow, where would we be, Joe, without our callers? I don't know.
Well, we wouldn't have any purpose.
That. thank you, everybody who took part in the conversation today. Thank you, Robbie, for appearing on the air with us. And we'll be back at you next week.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Rad Trads on Wednesday, July 17th, 9 p.m. at the Doug Fir Lounge in Portland. The Brooklyn-based five-piece Rad Trads play nostalgic rock with soul and a horn section. They're touring around their On Tap record. Again, that's the Rad Trads on Wednesday, July 17th, 9 p.m. at the Doug Fir Lounge, 830 East Burnside Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO Wednesday, July 24th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon. Broadcasting from a different city each year and airing on non-commercial radio stations coast to coast, this annual marathon features live reports, interviews with advocates and experts, and calls from listeners all over the country. This year's programming includes the voices of youth, students, and LGBTQ people, panels on fighting evictions, transitioning people back into housing, and ending homelessness now. That's the Homelessness Marathon, Wednesday, July 24th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Going home,
going home. Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and it's the top of the hour at 9 o'clock. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein discusses the xenophobic turn of U.S. immigration policy under the Trump administration. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Dimay Roberts talks with author Nisi Shaw about their epic debut novel that centers on an imaginary utopia.